Welcome to The Learning Curve, a show about helping kids get good grades in school and succeed in life. The Learning Curve is for parents, teachers, and students, because all of life is a learning curve, and you'll succeed to the extent that you can learn easily. Now, here's your hosts, the authors of How to Learn, How to Teach, Overcoming the Seven Barriers to Comprehension, Roger and Virginia.
Mathematics is the bane of too many students, and it need not be. And mathematics is often a difficult subject for parents when asked to help their kids with homework, and it should not be. Today's guest is Marilyn Burns, the founder of Math Solutions, and that's an organization that has been dedicated for almost 30 years to improving kindergarten to grade 8 mathematics teaching through providing professional development and resources. So welcome, Marilyn. I see you've got a wonderful background as a maths teacher, having begun teaching maths in 1962.
Yes.
And you're the author of several books, the first of which was in 1975. What a wonderful title. The I Hate Mathematics book. I tell you, that would have sold to me. So welcome.
Thank you.
Since you've taught math for quite a few years, have you seen changes in what is taught and how it is taught?
Oh, yes. I think in education, the pendulum is always swinging. So when I first started teaching, it was right around the time when, if you can remember, some people made new math came in.
Mm-hmm.
When Sputnik came, and we were afraid the Russians were going to beat us and the Japanese were going to best us, and we started teaching math in a new way, and it was a huge flop because the only people that seemed to understand it were the university professors who had imagined this,
right,
leaving behind many of the teachers who were responsible for children's formative attitudes and learning, and they themselves were not feeling particularly comfortable with math. So that sort of went its way, and then we swung back to getting students to practice more with paper and pencil, and then it became evident that kids could do lots with paper and pencil, and yet they couldn't use any of those skills to solve problems, so the pendulum was once again in motion. And I think what we're settling on now is that math is something that's supposed to make sense to children. So while they need to have skills, they also have to have a good balance of understanding.
It's interesting because I was taught, as you were taught, the old-fashioned way. You know, you used to work it out on pencil and paper, and you understood the process.
Yes, yours is not the question why just inverted multiply.
And then they brought in this newfangled way, and you're supposed to almost like cite it.
Well,
right.
since I was raised during the time, or learned math during the time of new math, I'm curious, what exactly was new math? Because I don't know what old math was.
Right. Well, I think new math was an attempt basically to have students understand the structures of mathematics. It was very good in its intentions. But the delivery, because when I first started teaching, I was given those books to, quote, teach new math, but I had a degree in mathematics, so it made sense to me. But if you didn't, it was very difficult to parse out. So I think the intent was good. They wanted children to really understand mathematics and not learn to do it in a robotic way. But it just was poorly conceived and poorly delivered, and it didn't last. Do you remember what your experience was like learning, quote, new math?
It made perfect sense to me because if I understand what new math was, you got a sense of what the ones column, tens columns, hundreds columns, and all that was, and you understood how you, once you got to 9, you had 10. And then once you got to 99, you had 100. So you were able to borrow, so you could subtract, and you were able to then add up and carry the whatever into the next column and then add from there. Is that new math?
Actually, it sounds like you're somebody for whom math came easily. And so you're one of the haves rather than the have-nots. But there are many kids that I remember even growing up that I would be able to borrow and carry, but the kids sitting next to me had no idea what to do and was continually doing things that didn't make any sense. Like instead of borrowing, like they couldn't take 5 from 3, so they just took 3 from 5 and got 2 and went on with it happily.
And not understanding why it happened.
Not even noticing that the answer was ridiculous.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Well, because they have no number sense. They don't have a sense of the quantity.
Right. Because I've been teaching for 50 years, but the last 2 years I've actually worked on this grant. It was the first grant in my entire professional career, and it was funded by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation to develop an assessment for teachers. Actually, this is something I can tell you about, because parents can do it. To to have an interview with students, to ask students questions, and then ask them always to explain how they reasoned. And yeah. So one of the questions, and this is for older kids at maybe 4th, 5th, 6th grade, one of the questions was 12.6 times 10. And we'd ask kids these questions, asking them to do it in their heads, not reaching for paper and pencil.
Right.
And I had this thing, I'd say 12.6 times 10, oh, the girl said, you always, when you multiply by 10, add a zero. So she added a zero and got 12.60, was totally satisfied. So she learned the rule, but didn't really understand the rule in the context of the problem.
She didn't understand the decimal point shift.
Yeah, well, she didn't understand the fact that you're increasing it by a factor of 10, so you have to move the decimal point.
See,
Virginia and I speak a different language on all of this. We're a generation apart.
But what works, works. But the most important thing, I had this fantasy, I guess, for 50 years I've been trying to improve how math is taught. You know, my latest fantasy is all we need is these 7 words. How did you figure out the answer? And I think teachers and parents just ask their kids that all the time and listen. Because children's ways of thinking are often different from the way we thought they should think, yet they're perfectly correct.
Yeah.
And actually, I tutor adults who are working towards their GED, and I do math, and I do the high-level math. So I am actually having to relearn my math from doing this, but we're currently working on geometry.
Yes.
And so I'm relearning my geometry, but anytime somebody comes up, we do word problems, anytime somebody comes up with an answer, I say, okay, how did you get it? Tell me what to write on the board. Show me the steps you went through, because I want to make sure, one, that they understood how they got there, that they didn't just suddenly blurt out the right answer, but two, I want the other students to see how they got to this answer as well. So yes, you've got to know how you got there.
And if you don't know how, if you can't remember how to do it, you've got to have some way to reason. So I think it's all about thinking and reasoning. I think that's what mathematics is all about, and sadly, it's almost taught as if it's something to be memorized and rotely done rather than understood and then reasoned.
Yeah.
So how do you feel about Montessori's approach to math for 3 to 6 year olds?
Oh, you know, my father-in-law was in London. When he grew up, he went to school with Madame Montessori.
Oh, wow.
I know. He did this really quite wonderful. He's no longer alive, but he's had wonderful stories. Well, you know, Montessori used all those hands-on materials that had the structure of the mathematics in it. So I did you go to Montessori as a child?
I didn't, but I was trained in Montessori method.
So all the gold beads where you can see the structure of the tens. So something like that where kids can get their hands on something abstract makes a great deal of sense.
Yeah, because then they get an innate sense of the actual quantities, the physical quantities involved.
Right.
Then they can apply the theoretical or symbol to it, like this is a 2 or a 10 or whatever.
But and
doing it the reverse way around, it's hard traffic for the littlies.
It is.
It was interesting in this project that I've been working on. I'm totally obsessed with arithmetic. It's really driven all my friends really batty at dinner. They just roll their eyes when I say, listen to what happened with this kid. But sitting there with a girl who's a fifth grader, so she was 10 or 11, and said, in your head, how much is 1,000 minus 998? And she thought and thought, and then, since I didn't give her paper and pencil, she was like scratching with her finger on the table to scratch out the nines and do the borrowing. And I'm thinking, like, this is ridiculous. So she never saw the relationship between addition and subtraction.
Mm.
And the poor thing, and yet she could do it with the procedure, but sometimes we don't always want the procedure to be what leads. We want the reasoning to be what leads.
Based on that, what is a good age to start to begin this type of mathematics with children?
I'm not at the crib age, but I think you can't start them young and start them right. You know, and there's simple for parents to do at home. I think that even setting the table is an example. Well, how many people are coming with feet? So how many plates do we need? Go get the plates and put them out. The things that we do at home, we'll go line your shoes up in pairs. Does everyone have a partner? How many pairs of shoes? How many shoes do you have? There's so many ways to naturally bring number and shape into children's lives, and it should just become part of their lives, but about which they can become curious and certainly not fearful.
Is there some place that parents can go? Because I'm sure they're all sitting there being, well, I wouldn't say all, but a majority of parents are probably sitting there being afraid of math. And how do I bring math into my child's life? Where can they go to find this?
My youngest grandchild, grandchild is now in the second grade, and his older sister's taking algebra, and I was over there for dinner one night, and their mom, I said, oh, I'm so glad you're here, I can't do this math, and I'm thinking, this is the wrong attitude for your children to be hearing from you, even if you don't feel that way. You took algebra, you went to college, you get on, get with the program here. And the fear that parents have, I even had a woman who was a New York Times reporter tell me how concerned she was because she couldn't help her son with his homework. He was a six-year-old in first grade. And I said, no. But it was the fear. It was the emotional part. But I tell parents, I think the thing that's helped parents and teachers who have concerns about math is using children's books. I mean, people love to read to children. They love to snuggle up and go through the books. And there are so many children's books that are good for helping kids not only learn how to count and learn about shapes as young children, but that even pose interesting problems for kids as they get older. And I'm working now on another project where we give teachers libraries of children's books to read aloud to the class, and then they wind up having a problem. There's a book that's been out for a while. You can enjoy this watch. I think the author is Australian, Martha Mayhew. It's called 17 Kings and 42 Elephants, Going on a Journey Through a Wild Wet Night, Baggy Ears Like Big Gum Elephants. The book just rollicks. It's wonderful. But then the question is, well, how did 17 kings share the responsibility of taking care of 42 elephants in a fair way? I mean, so you play with numbers. Make it playful. But there's so many books, and actually, I don't. I can even get you a list so you can just post a list of books that there's any good librarian would know. My house is flooded with these books.
What are the titles of the other books that you wrote, Marilyn?
Well, the first book I ever wrote was the IA Mathematics book. It was part of a series called The Brown Paper School that Little Brown published, and they're still around. The next book was The Book of Think, and then I wrote one about time, and then they were all nonfiction books, but more recently I've done four color picture books for children. One's called The Greedy Triangle, which is about a triangle that kept wishing that he had more sides and more corners and got himself...
He got so many that
he was on top of a hill and started to roll down. One called Spaghetti and Meatballs for All, about area and perimeter, and then lots of books for teachers. So they're all at Amazon. You can just take a look at them. But I think the world needs to be a little sillier for children. I think every five-year-old has the right to be five for a whole year before they have to be six, and they should be six for a whole year before they have to be seven, and let's let them play.
And
let's let them play with mathematics. Yes.
It's quite tragic that parents forget the small world and actually mishandle and give the kids losses.
Well, it's hard. People are doing their best, and people are so busy these days, and the world is so much more complex than when I grew up.
It sounds like what you advocate if you're going to teach mathematics or arithmetic. Now, what is the difference between arithmetic and mathematics?
You know, mathematics has to do with number, it has to do with shape, it has to do with patterns and have to do with probability and statistics. Arithmetic is just one aspect of mathematics.
Okay.
But it's important because numbers are part of our world. And look at the mortgage crisis. I'd like people to have had better arithmetic skills and reasoning, not the skills to borrow and carry, but the ability to reason so they would say, wait a minute, this is not making sense.
No, I think you're right on that one, Marilyn. When we did our last little research trip to Iceland, it was an awkward calculation to think in terms of how much is this really costing me in American dollars.
I was shopping and they had a sign on this rack of sweatshirts, 25% off discount taken at register. And this woman right next to me, she had this sweatshirt. It was $24.95. She said, you know how much it would be with the discount? So I sort of slipped into my teacher mode and I said, wait, get a grip, Marilyn. She just wants to know. It was just like, that made me sad that somebody would say to me, this thing costs $25 and it's a quarter off. Wouldn't you know that it's a little more than $6, so it's going to cost you less? You know, I find myself on airplanes when people ask what I do. I stop telling them I'm a math teacher because I get these heart-rending stories about when I was sent to the board and how I was humiliated and how it was difficult for me. And I would love to see all that stop.
Yeah.
And it's a cultural thing here in our country. I don't think, Roger, that way in Australia. I may be wrong, but...
Of course, I left Australia in 65, so I can't speak of it in contemporary times. But when I was at school, it was very much the British system.
Yes.
And if ever you saw the way in which teachers in the old British school system of the 19th century behaved, It was the same in Australia in the early 20th century. They just simply dictated, and you're supposed to get it. And of course, the teacher was brilliant, and if you didn't get it instantly, you were dumb. There was none of the thinking in those days. This was actually during World War II and just after the war. None of the thinking in those days that a teacher should be a little bit patient and help you understand what he's trying to get across to you. Oh, no.
Well, I believe that teaching by telling doesn't work when it requires the learner to make sense of it inside their own head. Like if I said to you, what day of the week does Thanksgiving come on? There's no way to figure that out. It's purely a convention. We decide we do it that Thursday in November.
Right.
So you have to get the information from a source outside yourself. But if I say, I have two tiles, and how many more do I need? So I have 10. That's something you can figure out and should figure out. So the difference between information that you should understand means that you don't teach by just standing up there and lecturing. It doesn't work. It doesn't work for the kids that don't learn, and that makes the world have haves and have-nots, and I'd like to see if we can do something about that.
You just brought to mind an idea. Do you find that students who are more 3D and holographic, do you find that they grasp mathematical understanding faster than those that are not?
Tell me again the description of the students.
Okay. They're very holographic. They see things things in 3D. They see things in holes. They can picture it in their mind and such.
Yes. Well, I think that even if it's not three-dimensional, even for people to be able to visualize is essential, because what is two? I mean, two is a concept that exists in your head. You've got to have some model, some visualization.
Yeah.
I remember all the work I did in calculus. You had to visualize how these curves were going, and the visualization is a huge help.
Yeah.
It's a huge help. The other thing I find very interesting is the connection between mathematics and music, how many mathematicians play instruments. So somehow the structure, even if you look at the notation for music, is so visual. So I think there's a very strong link between the visual and the abstract.
Well, yes, the reason for that, of course, is because of the numbers of the beats can be divided up into micros of the beats, or the timing.
So you learn all your fractions that way.
Yes, and then, of course, the notes as they go up the scale are harmonics, number harmonics of vibrations.
Right. And they're not exact vibrations. I mean, that's so interesting about the physics of it all. So mathematics isn't always clean, cut, and dry.
Mm.
There's a lot of uncertainty in the world of mathematics.
Would you encourage parents to encourage their children to take up music in some way then?
Oh, I think every child should take up music. It pains me that so many public schools are finding the budget cuts where they're giving up music and art. It just pains me. In the world without music, I just think I would love to have every child see all the instruments until they see one they just love and then let them have at it. Be singing. They should be doing so much music.
Do you think that the easy access we now currently enjoy to music, such as you can just turn on the radio, you can turn on your computer, and we can carry it with us, do you find that because it's so easy to obtain music, we don't really take the time to learn to play an instrument?
Well, you know, music for some people is a spectator activity. For some people, it's a participatory activity. So I don't really care what they do as long as there's music in their lives, and hopefully sometime they'll start singing along. Even that's important. So, but I think music should be part of the elementary curriculum for all children.
We did singing in my day. We didn't have instruments, nothing as grand as that. I found it amazing when I came to America and have all these high school monster orchestras.
Yeah, but music is important. Yeah, I think that parents are so concerned now about what they can do for their kids so their kids get, so they won't fall behind, so they have all the opportunities and options. And the truth is that most majors in college and most careers require mathematics today. So you've got to have your kid staying in the math, learning math and feeling comfortable with math in order to be successful. I think that, and so I tell parents, first of all, even if math is not your thing, don't ever let your child hear you say, I hate math, I wasn't good in math, like you have some kind of bad math gene that they might have gotten, or go see your mother, she'll help you, or go see your father, he'll help you. Children are very sensitive to those negative attitudes, and I think you should be careful never to say them, and I think that's number one, is just switch your attitude.
Yeah, and number two is don't ever impart to them the idea that it's difficult.
That's right. And the way to do that is let them see you doing math, not complaining over your checkbook, but you're saying, oh, no, I wonder how I should mix this fertilizer. Or let me think how much wallpaper I need. Or, oh, let me see how much more money I need to make a dollar. I mean, and let them just see you at all times as much as you can, keep you scoring again, doing math, not grumbling. Don't grumble. Yeah. Just do it. It's part of life.
And showing it to be useful and valuable.
Yes, and then get them to do it. Like, I think, I always say to parents, every day, take the coins out of your pocket or purse, put them out, and have your child count how much money there is. Count with them. Help them see that. I mean, there's just so many things you can do to make this, to make math just a part of their lives and not something to fear.
That raises a question in my mind, Marilyn. In your observation, have you observed a particular, shall we say, point of progress in the learning of maths where kids most often tend to lose it? I was going back on my own education and observing what I saw in school, it's hard for me to relate which year in school it was in Australia versus what would you call it in America as a grade, but probably around the 11-year-old mark is where it began to get really nasty. As
what
far
were
as
you learning?
Oh, it's when I was first introduced to algebra. That really ticked me off. And also, they started to try and teach me things like sines and cosines and all that ugliness.
And it's so sad because everybody hits their wall. So you hit your wall. And because math, I'll tell you, math is hard. I can't say parts of math aren't hard. I mean, it's complicated, it's complex, it's abstract. So I think that different people hit that wall at different times. That's the sadness is when I see young children hit it when they get to long division. Algebra. Sometimes people do so poorly in algebra but love geometry or vice versa because their brains are working in different ways. I think there's something in our country that troubles me is that learning should be enjoyable, but also it requires hard work, and that should also be enjoyable. If it's not easy, just keep at it. So I don't know if we expect our kids to keep at it. And then the second thing is give them ways so they can have access to it. I mean, sine and cosine is fascinating when you think of the ways in the real world that we have to measure things that we can't. How do you measure that tree? You can't climb up the tree. And there are so many ways that people could make it related to real life, could make it interesting, could make it problems to solve, to engage students. That's what school ought to be about. That's what math in school ought to always be about.
Are you familiar with the Waldorf schools?
Yes, yes.
And I have to say, I visited one 2 years ago, and I was fascinated by, I think it was the seventh grade math class. They were doing trigonometry.
Mm-hmm.
And what they did is they took a field trip to an island somewhere off of Newfoundland or somewhere around there. And they actually had to go out, and they were using their trigonometry to actually survey the land. And then
right.
they had to draw a map. And the other thing is they also had to decorate it in such a way that it was artful. And they created such beautiful sculptures by using an equation.
Well, so it served them, and it was interesting to them, and they got to express themselves fully. I think that's so important and so valuable. So many of our kids don't know why they're learning this. And I think teachers... We work all the time to figure out ways to engage children's minds so that they will be excited about what they're learning. So it sounds like that was an example where they were excited about what they're learning.
I'll tell you, if I had learned math that way and was able to see the art that could come out of a mathematical equation, I would have been in there like crazy learning it and seeing, oh, what can we create now with this particular equation? It was never made practical to me. It was just simply, here are the formulas. If you're given this, this is what you do, and you plug the values in here, and you solve the equation, and that's it.
People go at restaurants will take out tip tables, or they take out their iPhones with their tip app to figure out the tip of the restaurant because they
God.
Can't do this again. I mean, tip tables, it's so ridiculous because they give you the exact... Well, first of all, how much is our tips? I remember they used to be 10%. That's really dating myself.
Yeah.
Then one day it was all of a sudden 15%. How did that happen? I didn't get a notice in the mail that said, as of Monday, the tips at restaurants will now be 15%. Now it's 20%, and some of them add 18%. But the thing is, math is a social interaction. It's a social endeavor. There's so much in math that is really part of our lives, and yet people feel so disenfranchised from it.
That's true, because when you start to get on past the basic simple multiplication and stuff, you begin to sort of not be informed. Teachers fail to tell the kids what's the value to them, where can they use it in their life. I was given this, for example, this algebra subject, so what? I didn't even understand the word.
And it was interesting because when I was given it, I was so fascinated by it. So somebody had to find a way to make you fascinated by it. Because if it's fascinating to some person, then maybe that person can share his or her excitement with you, and it sounds like it didn't happen.
You must be very inquisitive, because I tell you, I switched off the moment they mentioned that word algebra and started putting letters on the board. I said, what the hell's all this about? I want to go surfing.
But look at surfing. When you look at surfing, all the thinking you have to do about judging where the wave is and how you're doing more mathematics than on the surfboard.
Actually, great athletes, unwittingly great mathematicians, because they have to calculate
speed
and predict the arrival of the ball and its trajectory and all sorts of stuff. And that's
you're doing
brilliant.
Something you love. Yeah. You're doing something you love.
Yeah. That's brilliant calculus, and they don't know they're doing it.
I think the biggest math crisis we have every year is when Thanksgiving, for everybody has to cook the turkey, because, oh my gosh, you have to figure out what size turkey, they say a pound per person, how many people are coming. You know, I don't know if Cousin Milton is coming, isn't coming, then I have to get the stuffing, and then I have to do this, and how much per pound, and put in the oven, and what kind of... I've seen people get really themselves worked into a ladder about figuring out what time to put that turkey in the oven. It's all arithmetic, but it's arithmetic where you have no exact answer, because the birds are going to be done when it's done. There's an example of the real kind of problems that math is all about. What time, how can we sit down to the table at 5 o'clock with the turkey ready?
So it sounds actually like the kitchen is a great place to start teaching mathematics.
I think so. But you know what? I used to teach fractions and say the reason you're learning fractions in answer to your comment, Roger, making it relevant, is because when you cook, you need fractions. And I'm standing in my own kitchen, and I'm doubling a recipe, and I called for 3/4 of a cup of chicken broth. I said, I'm not going to add. I just dumped in 3/4 and measured another 3/4. So that the real world has to be something that isn't always contextual in the world, but to me, to make it real means that I've got a child's curiosity. Because if I was handing that recipe, and it was 3/4 of a cup, now I got a problem, because what's half of 3/4? Like, it's actually half of 3/4 is 1 1/2 fourths, and that's not even my measuring cup. And what kind of fraction is 1 1/2 fourths? I mean, we have these discussions when I'm teaching children, because they say, how can you have that? So it's also a question of imagining and playing.
Marilyn, you've actually excited me about maths. I think you should take a win on that.
Yeah.
When you're waiting for algebra, Roger, just come on to California. I'll help you out.
So, as you've been a lot of fun, I thought that this was going to be a difficult interview with a mathematics teacher.
You were dreading it. You were dreading this. If we can't laugh without math, then life is not worth living. So, there you go.
Thanks for being with us, Marilyn. You've actually made us a lot of fun. I know it will have helped the audience a lot, particularly the parents who are in dread of this subject. It's been a lot of fun.
Yes, thanks very much to you both.
Thanks for listening to The Learning Curve with Roger and Virginia. For more information on the subjects covered during the show, visit howtolearneasily.com or send an email to questions@howtolearneasily.com.